Thanks for the introduction and for invitation to speak again at the UCSB and KITP. I'm going to talk about a work based on two papers, one from December of last year with Duliu, Emmanuel Diaconescu, Bogdan Florea, and Shamit Kasher, and the second from January of this year, written with Shamit Kasher and John McGreevy. The motivation for our work to revisit the problem of mediation of supersymmetry breaking in string compactifications comes from the upcoming experimental of LHC, which will turn on in 2007 in Geneva, and it's widely hoped in the physics community that at LHC we will discover how electroweak scale is stabilized and how electroweak symmetry is broken. And the leading candidate for this is so-called low-energy supersymmetry breaking. So it's a very timely subject to study. Let me just give you a brief one-page review of supersymmetric extension of standard model, so-called minimos, SSM. Here, one introduces an extra particle for each standard model particle, so so-called superpartner. So the spectrum is doubled, interactions are introduced in such a way so that a new symmetry called supersymmetry is obeyed. And this is solves the so-called hierarchy problem of why Higgs field is so much lighter than the Planck scale, essentially by cancelling the quadratically divergent contribution to Higgs mass from the standard model particles. So the superpartners cancel the quadratic divergence of the partners, standard model partners, which stabilizes the Higgs scale close to the supersymmetry breaking scale. So if supersymmetry explains the weak scale, one of the first predictions that it does is that we should see the supersymmetry partners somewhere close to the weak scales. So in particular, we should be able to see them at LHC. Some people would say that we actually should have already seen parts of the spectrum. In particular, supersymmetry predicts a light Higgs scalar, which people have hoped to already see either at LEP or at Tevatron. However, one still can be somewhat optimistic. One piece of optimistic evidence is cage coupling unification, which works spectacularly well. So here I drew a plot of cage couplings. The dashed lines are depict the evolution of cage couplings of electric weak and strong interactions with RG scale in standard model. So you can see that they almost meet, but not quite. And in the supersymmetric version of standard model, they meet to a very high accuracy, somewhere around 2 times 10 to 16 GeV. So in this talk, we will assume that supersymmetry is around the corner, and we will try to build some semi-realistic models of supersymmetry and how it's broken in the context of string theory. A phenomenological approach to this would be just to take the supersymmetric Lagrangian and add to it all possible supersymmetry breaking terms, which have the property, they are so-called soft Suzy breaking terms, that they do not reintroduce quadratic divergence into the Higgs mass. So these terms are all essentially terms which are dimensionful. So in particular, you can introduce supersymmetry breaking terms for, let's say, the masses of the gauginos, of quarks, and so on. Well, the virtue of this approach is that you could then go into your accelerator and actually try to match the parameters of this phenomenological Lagrangian against your experiments. The drawback is, though, that one introduces about 100 new parameters, which is an awful lot of new parameters, which would have to be measured. So it would be nice to have actually some simple models which do predict some patterns behind these 100 parameters, which can be then tested at accelerators. So one hint that there is some structure to them is so-called flavor universality, or some people call it a flavor problem. so it depends. Namely, a lot of these subterms would introduce dependence on flavor into the quark mass matrix, for example, and this then radiatively would induce large flavor changing neutral currents. For example, excuse me, it would introduce large KK bar mixing and mu to E gamma, and there are experimental limits on this which constrain the flavor of diagonal terms of the quark mass matrix to be smaller than about 1 to 1,000. Now, the first idea that could cross one's mind to explain the flavor symmetry of the quark masses using flavor symmetry of the standard model. However, this clearly does not work because the flavor symmetry is already broken by Yukawa's in the standard model. So one has to come with a new mechanism to implement flavor universality into the supersymmetry breaking sector. One idea which has a long history in the SUSY literature is to assume that besides standard model, there is a separate sector which breaks supersymmetry. This is so-called hidden sector. And then the interactions between the hidden sector and the visible sector, namely the MSSM, are flavor blind. So if they are flavor blind, which means that they do not depend on the generation, or the particle masses degeneracy will be automatically obeyed. So there are several different candidates for flavor-blind mediations. In particular, they could be gauge forces, because these depend only on the gauge quantum numbers, which are the same in each generation. This has been implemented in so-called gauge and gauge-inner mediation, which I will both discuss. Another possibility is coupling to so-called conformal supermultiplet, when one writes n equals 1 supergravity in conformal calculus. This leads to anomaly mediation. In string theory, dilaton has universal couplings, which could lead to dilaton mediation, which I won't discuss. But I will discuss the first three.
What is the goal here? So is the goal to explain the ratios of quantum neutral masses of the supermultiplet?
Well, what's the goal of my talk? Or of what? Well, these mediation mechanisms are some concrete ways how you can break supersymmetry and induce soft terms in the standard model that, in particular, will obey the experimental constraints and they give you some predictions which you then can test at LHC and so on.
So the values of the masses and couplings are included in the.
The values of coupling. Well, you can get predictions for the masses of the quarks and gauge-inners, which can be tested, because each of these models of mediation will give you a different spectrum of the superpartners. So let me firstly discuss gravity mediation and explain why, even though naively one would think that gravity mediation is flavor universal, because after all, the graviton couples to the stress sensor, which does not see flavor. Really, in phenomenology literature, it has been for a long time considered not to be flavor universal. The reason is that in any theory of quantum gravity, there are going to be some fields besides the gravitons, like some heavy moduli fields, somewhere around the Planck scale, which are going to spoil the flavor universality of the gravity. So let me introduce a field X, which I will be using in the rest of the talk, so-called Spurian field, which is going to parameterize the hidden sector. So instead of caring about all the complicated details of this hidden sector, one can just introduce this field to which one gives an expectation value. In particular, the theta squared expectation value of this field the spurious F-term parametrizes the stress of the supersymmetric breaking. If there are some massive fields which you would expect to couple both to the hidden sector and to the standard model, in particular, in string theory, you could imagine that hidden sector is sitting somewhere in the KBL, standard model at a different place, then the bulk moduli fields would couple those two sectors. When you integrate the bulk moduli fields, you would expect couplings of this form. They would be suppressed by the square of the mass of the bulk fields. And these coefficients here would be flavor dependent, because the moduli fields can see the flavor, right? So in particular, in heterotic string theory, different generations are associated to different harmonic forms. So you expect that the moduli field will have different coupling to different generations. So one expects these kind of couplings. When you plug in the for the expectation value of the spurion, you can see that this is going to induce the mass term for the squarks. Essentially, from the theta force terms, you will get the mass term, which looks like this. It's a flavor-dependent mass term for the squarks. Now, in gravity mediation, you will get a similar contribution of the same order. So you see that this flavor-dependent contribution is going to spoil any flavor universality you might have started with some universal gravity contribution. That's why gravity mediation is considered to be non-universal. And that's why people have tried to build other models of mediation where universality would be clear. So let me first start with cage mediation. The way one implements it is that supersymmetry breaking is mediated by so-called messenger fields. These are fields which are charged under the standard model gauge group, and they also couple to the hidden sector. Let me be concrete. So one can introduce messengers, which I call phi plus phi bar, several copies of them, which I parameterize by little I index. If they are in phi plus phi bar of SU5, then they have some couplings to the gauge bosons, which then radiatively induce supersymmetry breaking mass terms for the particles. People like to introduce the particles to be in conflict representations of SU5 so that the unification is preserved. And one can model the whole process by this superpotential. This is the superpotential of the supersymmetric standard model. And here is a superpotential which models the direct coupling of the messengers to the hidden sector. So X is the spurion whose expectation value, M, is going to give mass to the messengers, and the F-term of the spurion is going to give a supersymmetry breaking splitting between the scalars and fermions of the messengers. These messengers then couple to gauge fields and gauginos, and here I have drawn the Feynman diagrams which are going to generate masses. This one loop Feynman diagram generates masses for gauginos, and they essentially go like the gauge coupling times the F-term divided by mass of the messengers. On the other hand, the scalars get masses at two loops, but since the two-loop contribution goes to the scalar mass squared, both the scalar superpartners and gauginos are going to have mass of the same order, which is essentially F divided by M times the gauge coupling. So if this ratio is comparable to TeV, one can naturally get supersymmetry breaking soft terms close to the weak scale. Let me review some constraints on gauge mediation. In particular, one would want gauge mediation to dominate over gravity mediation because the non-universal gravity or moduli mediation could spoil the universality of the gauge mediation. So since as I reviewed the constraints from KK bar mixing, one needs the diagonality of the scalar mass matrix to be precise to about one part in thousand. that means that the gauge mediated contribution should be about 1,000 times greater at least than the gravity mediated contribution. That gives a upper bound on the mass of the messengers so that they couple sufficiently strong the hidden and visible sectors. In particular, the messengers should not be heavier than about 10 to 15 GeV. When you plug this in to this formula and require that the particles have mass around the TeV, that gives a, an upper bound on the strength of the Suzy breaking. So the F term should be less than about 10 to 10 GeV squared. Another constraint comes from requiring perturbativity of the gauge couplings at the unification scale, if one cares about unification. Because when you add the extra pairs of messengers, they will drive the gauge coupling to stronger values in the Archie flow. So if you have too many extra messengers in 5 plus 5 bar, that would imply that the gauge coupling would get too strong at the 10 to 16 GeV, and one would expect unification to be spoiled. One can estimate it, for example, if the mass of the messengers is this, then the gauge coupling running is modified about this scale, and one shouldn't have more than about 5 of the messengers for perturbative gauge coupling to still work. So the bottom line is that the model should not be too complicated and have too many messengers. Another constraint comes from cosmology, because in this model, gravity noise is the lightest supersymmetric particle with mass given by essentially the F term divided by the Planck mass. And when it fizzes out with this density, which means that if the F term is too large, then one would expect the gravity noise to overclose the density of the universe. So let me shift the gear from phenomenology side to string theory and discuss how one could actually implement a gauge mediation in string theory. For concreteness, I will consider type 2 string theory compactifications and will assume that the standard model is lives on a stack of D-brains, let's say a stack of 5 D-brains which give you an SU5, and a supersymmetry breaking hidden sector is on another stack of D-brains, distance D away from the standard model stack. Here I have drawn some blobs over the stacks which should represent the cycles on which these D-brains are wrapped. So for concreteness, you can think of that to be string theory, where these are seven D7 brains. Or any other favorite D-brain model you like. So supersymmetry is broken dynamically in the hidden D-brain stack at some scale, lambda sub h, and we will assume that all the moduli, like the complex structure and Kähler moduli, are stabilized supersymmetry at a higher scale than the scale of dynamical supersymmetry breaking, so that we can safely integrate them out. And when we talk about supersymmetry breaking, we can concentrate only on this dynamically supersymmetry breaking sector.
So how are you worrying about the cosmological constant?
Well, we just fine-tune it to be zero.
Okay, so it's only contributions then come from
If you look at the potential in n equals 1 supergravity, it has two terms, right? From dw squared minus 3w squared. So we assume that w is fine-tuned to have correct value so that this sum or is equal to zero.
Okay, and the positive contribution
is going to come from... Well, there is a positive contribution coming from here in particular, because the supersymmetry is broken in this hidden sector, so it gives you a positive contribution in the dw squared.
But
well, if there are other positive contributions, they have to be small enough so that they don't dominate over this gauge-mediated contribution. Yeah, it could happen that W could be too large, and then this contribution is not large enough to uplift you to zero cosmological constant.
Yeah, I guess what I was concerned about is whatever you put in, the output conflict to, you know, break politically.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't sure whether it was coming from this or from something else.
Yeah, so there is some uplifting coming from here. We have not analyzed whether that's enough in a concrete example to actually uplift you up to zero cosmological constant. If you put there a different uplifting term, its F term should not be more than 1,000 times greater than the F terms of this part, so that you don't introduce too much supersymmetry breaking, which would, you know, through moduli, induce flavor, non-universal terms. But in principle, there could be other supersymmetry breaking somewhere else in the compactification manifold.
Right, in which case the moduli would be
supersymmetric. Yeah. So this, as I will discuss in a second, these two D-brain stacks are very close to each other. So you could think of this as actually as a local model. So what I'm saying is that if you stabilize moduli supersymmetrically, then you can ignore them, because that's like outside the scope of my talk and of the work that we did. So, and one particular way how you can ignore them is if you stabilize them supersymmetrically. Or then you would have to, because, yeah, or you would have to do more work and worry about them if you do not stabilize them supersymmetrically. Well, let me discuss how supersymmetry breaking is mediated in this example. The open strings, which stretch between the two D-brain stacks, have mass which is just given by the distance between the stacks. Now, if this mass is a lot smaller than the string scale, or equivalently, if the two D-brain stacks are at a closer distance than the string scale, string length, then the dominant interaction between the D-brain stacks is via these open stretch strings. And they essentially act as the messengers of supersymmetry breaking. If you look at it in four-dimensional effective descriptions, these open strings are chiral fields which can run in either direction. If you assume that it's an oriented model, then you have strings either running towards the standard model or away from it. So they will give you chiral fields which, in the case where you have an SU5 cut, would be in 5 plus 5 bar of the unified gauge group. And this is exactly the spectrum of the gauge-mediated model which I described before. So one has exactly the same spectrum, and in particular one expects also to have a coupling of this form, which would couple the open strings to the hidden sector. In particular, in this case, the hidden sector is the sector of the stack of the D-brains which break supersymmetry. So this way, one can easily implement a model of gauge mediation in string theory. The number of copies of the messenger 5 plus 5 bar depends on the details of the hidden sector gauge group. Since, well, in the simplest example, we would just have a stack of D-brains. These fields are bifundamentals, so clearly, when you have a more complicated or bigger gauge group in the hidden sector, then you will get more copies of the messengers. Well, another regime which could happen is when you take the D-brains and you make the distance between them larger, then the mediation mechanisms will change. In particular, once they are far apart, further than the string lengths, then the dominant interaction between the stacks is going to be via closed strings, which is nothing else than gravity and moduli mediation. So in this way, string theory continuously interpolates between gauge mediation when the two D-brain stacks are very close to each other, and gravity mediation when they are far apart. Somewhere in between, there is a regime where D-brains are at about string length distance, where excited modes also contribute, and there isn't really any good four-dimensional descriptions, and the mediation mechanism could be called string-mediated supersymmetry breaking.
So what are you assuming gives you the distinction between the
Where does the distinction between flavors come? Well, it depends very much on the concrete model of standard model you have.
But you're assuming it's geometrical?
Yes, I assume it's geometrical.
Okay.
So, in conclusion, one can suppress moduli mediation and achieve a flavor universal mechanism of supersymmetry mediation if the D-brain stacks are close to each other, so that gauge mediation dominates. One can construct semi-realistic examples, which we constructed mainly to prove that this thing can be done. So I'll briefly describe some examples which we made. We actually constructed compact examples where we embedded the whole standard model and the hidden sector in a compact Calabi-Yau manifold. But today there was an article where by Urangar and collaborators where they extended our work and they constructed some local examples, because clearly, since the two D-brain stacks in the regime of entries are close to each other, one could think of them separately and not worry about the rest of the manifold. So that's the philosophy that Urangar and collaborators take in their paper. In one set of examples we constructed in our paper, we took an F-theory compactification on a Calabi-Yau fourfold and used the F-theory heterotic string duality to manufacture something like an SU5 standard model with three generations via a spectral cover construction. Such an SU5 GAT essentially lives on a disabled brain wrapping a four cycle in the Calabi-Yau elliptic fourfold, and it's dual to heterotic E8 boundary. In this concrete example, we realize that there is a very simple hidden sector which can be constructed using the same construction. Namely, in the old days, in mid 80s, when people made the first models of supersymmetry breaking, one of them they made was an SU5 with one generation. It turns out that this theory breaks. So this theory breaks supersymmetry dynamically at about this scale. It confines and breaks supersymmetry. If one assumes that the gauge coupling of the visible and hidden sector are approximately the same at the GAT scale, because the cycles they wrap have similar volumes, then one can compute the scale at which the of the F-term using naive dimensional analysis. And it turns out that it's somewhere at the upper range of the window allowed for gauge mediation. Well, if you assume that gauge mediation has to be stronger than the gravity mediation. So, it would be nice to have a simple model, more simple model of of supersymmetry breaking, where the scale of supersymmetry breaking is lower, but this one is sufficient for our purposes, where we are just trying to demonstrate that the concrete example can be built. So this is going to give TV's particle masses if the mass of the messengers is about 10 to 15 GeV. The string scale, you can take something like 10 to 16, 17, yeah, somewhere around the GAT scale. There is a factor of 2 pi in my definition of string length. my string length is 2 pi times square root of alpha prime, because that...
It's TV is part of
it. Yeah. If you define your string length that way, then all the formulas in Joe's book simplify.
Never find your intervention.
Yeah. It's going to be described in detail in the upcoming paper with Edward on axioms, that why these conventions are simple.
There is no convention to be simple for everything.
That's true, yeah. That's true. But for this particular phenomenological considerations, it turns out that these conventions are simpler, and that's why there is a factor of 10 in here coming from 2 pi when you go from 10 to 16 to 10 to 15 GeV. The concrete geometry where the particular example I just described can be embedded, or the concrete compact geometry, is an F3 compactified on an elliptic fourfold, where the base of the elliptic fibration is a P1 fibration of a delta Z. I'm not sure whether that's anyway helpful, but I just wanted to say it to show you that we actually have a concrete example. And the gauge symmetry comes from two D7 main stacks wrapping the two sections of the P1 fibration. Turns out that the P1 fibration has exactly two sections, and the distance between them is a complex structure modulus, so it can be, in principle, fine-tuned to be that small value I just listed on previous slide by setting some discrete choices of fluxes. On heterotic string theory, one would guess that one gets a Calabi-Yau threefold, which is an elliptic fibration over del peso 8, and the two spectral covers will turn into two end-of-the-world brains, giving the visible and hidden sector. However, so this description is valid when the two stacks of D-brains are far away. But once you bring them close to each other so that gauge mediation wins, it's not so useful to describe it in the heterotic side. Because the heterotic side is much better suited for things like anomaly mediation, because you don't really have some open strings which would connect the hidden and visible sectors. Those most likely correspond to the open membranes which are stretched between the two sectors, but for those we don't have a well-controlled description.
Section, so is that sort of the average distance, or are they equal distance over the whole
thing? Well, so this is the thing. You notice that the mass of the open strings is lower than the KK scale. So the open strings don't really see the geometry. So all you care is that, you know, how light they are. And as far as the two sections are different, you know, so they have a different shape in the P1 fibration. So I'd say that that's the closest distance between the stacks, but it's going to be different at the different points.
Yeah.
But since it's the mass of the open strings is less than the KK scale, they don't see the internal geometry of the Calabi-Yau.
Isn't there
a problem then? Because if it's really controlled by local effect, usually the different quarks and stuff like that would actually have different wavelengths. And then how do you probe locally? Well, in gauge mediation, you assume that the main interaction between these open strings, the messengers, and the standard model is through gauge fields and gauge inos, and which then later which couple to standard model particles and induce Fleber universal terms. If it were to happen that there is a direct coupling between these messengers and the standard model particles, which is Fleber non-universal, then that would spoil the universality of what you would have without these couplings. So in particular, you have to make sure that those couplings are absent. So here I just summarize how one could stabilize moduli supersymmetrically in a type 2 compactification, which is probably well known to the audience. So for complex structure moduli, for a particular type of fluxes, which have 3.0 fluxes, one can stabilize them. One can use these fluxes to stabilize the complex structure moduli supersymmetrically using the Gukov-Wafa-Witten superpotential. The KLM moduli can be stabilized, for example, using non-perturbative effects like these three main instantons. And we checked that in the concrete example I presented in previous few slides, there are enough four cycles which are known to give a non-trivial superpotential. Essentially, there is a condition due to Witten for such a four cycle to generate a superpotential when it's wrapped by a discrete Bain instanton, and there is a large number of them in our example. So in principle, so our assumption that we stabilize the moduli supersymmetrically at a high scale seems to be justified in the concrete example we built. Another set of models one can make is to use D3 Bains instead of D7 Bains, and there was a nice recent construction due to Erlinde and Meinhold, where they built a quiver analog of standard model by putting a D3 Bain at the partially resolved Del Plessor H singularity. In another nice recent work, people have manufactured hidden sectors, or they manufactured D-Bains, which are dynamically baked supersymmetry, by putting a D-C-Bain at an obstructing singularity. Essentially, the reasoning behind why such a system breaks supersymmetry is that one would assume that the D-Bains dissolve into flux and deform the complex structure of the singularity, but since the complex structure is obstructed, such a deformation cannot be supersymmetric, and the gauge theory has to break supersymmetrically dynamically. There is some controversy about this model still going on in the literature, because some authors have pointed out that there is a runaway direction in the Kähler moduli direction, and it still has to be settled whether the theory spontaneously breaks supersymmetry or whether it runs away in the Kähler direction and restores supersymmetry at some large value of the moduli. One can use these two constructions to build a model of supersymmetry of gauge mediation, where one puts a standard model, one gets a standard model from a D3 Bain sitting at the Del Plessor H singularity, and a hidden sector from another D3 Bain sitting at the nearby Del Plessor 1 singularity. And in this kind of model, one could actually imagine that these two, the standard model plus hidden sector, are sitting at some large throat, which is away from the rest of the compact collabial, and that way it would be possible to decouple the UV physics and just concentrate on the local physics of the standard model plus hidden sector. So this is analogous to some attempts of constructing local models of standard model, but here we go one step further, that we, by including also the hidden sector in a local construction. And as I mentioned before, this has been recently used by the work of Ranga. Another approach to solving the flavor problem is using so-called higher dimensional sequestering. This has been used in anomaly and gauge mediation. One assumes that the visible and hidden sector are separated by some large distance, capital L, so that the flavor non-universal soft terms coming from, let's say, moduli are suppressed exponentially. The reasoning behind it is as follows. As I discussed before, when you integrate out massive moduli, various bulk fields with a mass M, then generally one would expect that dangerous flavor non-universal terms like this would be generated. Essentially, they come from a tree diagram which exchange one moduli field. Now, if the bulk fields are sufficiently heavy, if their mass is more than the KK scale, 1 over the inverse length, then one would expect, it happens that these coefficients are suppressed exponentially. Essentially, this is the familiar suppression of the Yukawa potential. So the assumption in both anomaly and gauge mediation is that there is a sector of the fundamental theory, higher dimensional theory, where it's possible to separate the hidden and visible sector by a large distance and at the same time keep the moduli at the sufficiently high scale so that the dangerous flavor changing terms are exponentially suppressed, and the nice anomaly and Gaijino mediated soft terms win. Let me now review why that's necessary. In anomaly mediation, one can understand anomaly mediation by starting from supergravity Lagrangian written in superconformal calculus. The sugar action takes this form. Here, F is a supergravity potential, which can be written in terms of the Kähler potential. This is the superpotential for the metro fields. This is the gauge kinetic term. And the field phi is so-called conformal compensator. Essentially, by putting here this field, the action becomes formally conformally invariant. And then, when this field gets a valve, when one puts it equal to 1, the conformal invariance is broken, and by integrating it out, the usual Einstein term for the gravity gets generated, and one recovers the usual form of the supergravity action, the Poincaré form. The nice thing about this conformal compensator is that it's coupling to the matter field. In particular, how many powers of it you have to include in two different terms depends just on the mass dimension and the U1R charge of the different fields. So in particular, it's again flavor universal. One can compute the soft terms generated if the conformal compensator has an F term. They take the following answer. These are the soft terms for the Gaijinos, and these are the soft terms for the scalar terms. So in particular, you see that they depend on the anomalous dimension or the change of the anomalous dimension with scale. So that's the violation of the conformal invariant. The thing to notice about these answers is that roughly they are of the order of the size of the conformal compensator F term. The F term takes the dimension of mass because the conformal compensator itself is massless. So if one wants for anomaly mediation to be dominant and stronger than gravity mediation, it's necessary that the opposite of this inequality is satisfied. Yes, the conformal compensator, well, let me backtrack a bit. The usual way how one tries to embed anomaly mediation is to assume that there is some hidden sector which makes supersymmetry with some primordial F term F naught. Now the conformal compensator couples to this hidden sector and it gets its own F term F sub phi. In concrete examples which you can in which you can compute the value of the F term for the conformal compensator, it turns out that it's generally it's smaller than the primordial F term divided by Planck mass. Well, what that means is that in generic situations, the mass, the soft terms induced by the conformal compensator are going to be smaller because they are determined by this term than the soft terms coming from gravity and moduli mediation, which are determined by this ratio. So in generic situations, one would expect that moduli mediation just dominates over anomaly mediation, and anomaly mediation is just a tiny contribution which can be neglected. And that makes sense, because anomaly mediation is a one-loop effect, while, for example, moduli and gravity mediation is three-level effect. So in most situations, one would expect that moduli mediation wins. A way how one could achieve a situation, a non-generic situation clearly, in which that's not true, a situation in which anomaly mediation wins, is to assume that the sequestering is at work and that the hidden sector is far away so that the moduli mediated soft terms are Yukawa suppressed. So that's the motivation for sequestering of the hidden sector in anomaly mediation. The motivation in so-called Gaijino mediation is slightly different. Essentially it boils down to the same thing, is that one has to suppress the moduli for some reason. In Gaijino mediation, the supersymmetric breaking sector is assumed to be far away in the hidden dimension, in extra dimension, and Now the difference is that one assumes that the standard model gauge fields and gauginess live in part of the bulk of the extra dimension. So in particular, if you were a phenomenologist and lived in a five-dimensional world, then the gauge fields would be living in the along the interval. And one assumes, however, the metro fields, standard model metro fields, do not live in all of the bulk, but are far away from the hidden sector. So if you have a five-dimensional picture, then on one side of the interval is the hidden sector, on the other side of the interval are the standard model quarks and leptons, and in the bulk, the gauge fields and gauginess can propagate. Since the gauginess and gauge fields have a direct coupling to the hidden sector, one expects them to get a large mass from the direct coupling, large supersymmetric breaking mass from the direct coupling to the hidden sector. So the gauginess will get this kind of coupling, which, when the spurion gets a well, induces a mass for the gauginess. The quarks and leptons then in turn get soft terms coming from the RG flow from the high scale. Down to the TV scale. And one can compute that in the RG running with the heavy gauginess, the quarks and leptons will catch up and will get the flavor universal large mass terms. It turns out, however, that when you reduce the gauginess from higher dimensions to four dimensions, their masses will get suppressed by powers of the length of the extra dimension because of wave function renormalization, essentially, and the induced soft terms end up being comparable to the induced soft terms coming from moduli mediation. So, to make gauginess mediation to work, one has to suppress using Yukawa suppression the moduli mediated soft terms. In the paper with Shamit, Kashfur, and John McGreevy, I have argued that in most thing theory compactifications, the bulk moduli actually are not heavy enough for the sequestering to work. The examples which we discussed, and to illustrate this, we find that the masses of the bulk fields are parametrically lighter than the KK scale, 1 over L. Hence, in most compactification, one would expect gravity and gauginess mediation to dominate over anomaly and the gravity and moduli mediation to dominate over anomaly and gauginess mediation. So one can easily estimate the scales of the different masses and so on. So I'll just go over it purely for illustration and because it's fun. So if we consider an isotropic manifold which has a size capital L, then the KK scale is the inverse length of the compactification manifold. The Planck scale can be easily deduced from reducing the Einstein-Hilbert action. So this is the Einstein-Hilbert term in 10 dimensions. When you reduce it down to 4 dimensions, one gets an extra factor of volume of the compactification manifold up front. But this coefficient here in 4 dimensions is just the Planck mass squared, so the Planck mass goes like the cube of the length of the size of the compactification manifold. To estimate the bulk fields masses, there are two things necessary to realize. One of them is that their kinetic term has this form. Here I'm writing the bulk fields in a convention where they are massless, so where they are dimensionless, so they are just numbers, then the coefficient here is Planck mass, and essentially, for example, you can understand it intuitively for shape moduli like Kaelin complex fraction moduli, is because to a large extent their kinetic term is just going to come from the deformation of the compact Calabi-Yau, so they more or less come from the Hilbert action, and this is the what you get when you reduce to four dimensions. And if we assume that these fields have a potential energy which near the minimum, since all of them are already in their minima, it's going to take this form, where V0 is some coefficient, then from this action, this kinetic term plus this potential energy, we immediately get that the mass of the moduli field goes like squared of the potential energy coefficient divided by L cube. Now it's immediate to see why the masses of moduli in many compactifications going to decrease faster than the KK scale. It's essentially because of bulk locality. What that means is that if you have a local contribution to the potential energy, then you would expect it not to grow faster than the volume of the compactification manifold, just because the local contributions to energy don't grow faster than the volume. In fact, most contributions grow slower than the volume. So in that case, you will get that here the mass of the bulk field will be decreasing faster than 1 over L. And I was told that Nima is actually trying to find some proof that that's true because of bulk locality in some special examples, rigorously. That the mass of the bulk field has to go has to be less than 1 over L. Well, 1 over L.
So he's saying that these are.
Yeah, it does. You get 1 over L cubed for complex structure moduli in type 2B string theory. For other moduli, and in different situations, you get different scalings. I'm actually going to describe it, different scalings. So, in type 2B string theory, the complex structure moduli get mass from the NSNS and RF axis. Essentially, they are the potential energy of the complex structure moduli comes from the energy of the fluxes, and one can easily determine the scaling of this potential energy with the size of the manifold. Essentially, if we absorb all the scaling into the metric scales like square of the size of the manifold, but here you have 3 powers of g, well, 6 powers of g squared of that, so that's 3 powers of g from here, and 3 inverse powers of metric from here. So there is overall no scaling of metric and no scaling of distance in this contribution to vacuum energy. So you immediately get that the potential energy has a scaling to 0th power in the size of the compactification manifold. So when one plugs it into the formula from previous slide, you get that the complex structure moduli go like 1 over the size of the manifold cube. That's a famous formula from flat compactifications. For Kähler moduli, people usually use non-perturbative effects to stabilize them. For example, one can use distributed instantons or non-perturbative dynamics of on D7 brain what volume gauge series. These effects vanish exponentially at large volume. Essentially, they go like the exponent goes like minus the volume of the 4 cycle that the D3 brain wraps, or the volume of the 4 cycle that the D7 brain wrap on which the gauge theory lives. So these effects clearly are going to give a mass to the bulk field which is smaller than which is going to grow to a smaller values than the KK scale. One could also consider perturbative quantum corrections to the Kähler potentials, and these have been in fact evaluated at the leading order by Berg, Haag, and Kors, and they give a correction to the potential energy which goes like this, which again gives a parametric scaling for the Kähler moduli masses which is faster than the KK scale. So the conclusion is that in type 2B string theory, all the moduli we considered are going to be dangerous for mediation of supersymmetric baking. Let me discuss one more example where the situation is slightly better, namely the case where you compactify on an anisotropic manifold, and in particular we will consider heterotic M-theory, which is essentially a compactification of M-theory on a Calabi-Yau manifold times an interval. The interval, the Calabi-Yau manifold itself is small. Its size is about a few 11-dimensional Planck lengths, and is determined by the gauge coupling. And the length of the interval can be larger. And in particular, in the phenomenologically favored region of MCA, the size of the interval is about one or two orders of magnitude larger than the size of the Calabi-Yau. So one can consider that to be an anisotropic complexification to a large degree. So in this situation, we can concentrate only on the length of the interval, and one could hope to sequester the two boundaries and assume that on one of the boundaries the standard model lives, and on the other one the hidden sector lives. This would not be relevant for gauge intermediation, where gauge fields have to live in the bulk, but it would be relevant for anomaly mediation, and because for that gauge fields do not need to live in the bulk. The situation here is slightly improved compared to type 2B string theory. One can compute, for example, the mass of the complex structure moduli, which comes from G-flux. This is very much analogous to the mass of the complex structure moduli coming from NSNS and R-fluxes in the type 2B case. And it turns out that the mass scales like 1 over L. So it's comparable to the KK scale. And then it's really a question of a detailed computation of the coefficient here in the numerator, whether the mass of the complex structure moduli is actually several times larger than the KK scale, so that the Yukawa suppression works, or whether it's comparable or smaller than the KK scale, so that the Yukawa suppression does not work. So that's a detailed numerical question which is beyond the scope of our work. But it would be interesting to actually go ahead and compute it, because it can be done in principle, for example, following the work of Steele and Oliver. However, in this situation, the Kellner moduli are more troubling, because they do not get mass from the G-flux, just like in the type 2B case, the Kellner moduli didn't get mass from the fluxes. These can get mass, for example, from the membrane instantons, which are stretching across the entire interval and wrap a curve in the Calabi-Yau manifold. Well, clearly, the action of this instanton, which is essentially given by the volume, by their volume, grows with the length of the interval, which means that they are going to generate masses which are exponentially suppressed by this action, so they are exponentially suppressed by the length of the interval. These masses at the large length of the interval, which is relevant for anomaly mediation, are going to be smaller than the KK scale. So one would expect that the Kellner moduli are dangerous and spoil any kind of flavor universality one might have hoped for. In certain compactifications where you have U1 factors in the gauge bundle on the Calabi-Yau manifold, the situation is slightly better actually, because in such cases, when the U1 factor has a non-zero first chain class, the Kellner moduli can get the mass from the gauge fluxes, which goes like 1 over square root of the length of the interval. This is essentially because the potential energy due to these gauge fluxes is not going to depend on the length of the interval, since the gauge fields are located only on the boundaries of the interval. So this is fairly promising, although one has to point out that these fluxes do not fix the overall volume modulus. This is because the potential energy for these fluxes is just imposing the stability condition for the gauge bundle, that FAB bar times omega AB bar equals zero, where omega is the Kellner form. Or more abstractly, that the wedge product of the chain class with two twice the Kellner form is zero. This condition is homogeneous in the Kellner form, which means that it's not going to fix the Kellner modulus, whose wave function is given by the Kellner form. So one would have to fix this particular modulus, for example, by the open membrane instantons, as I discussed on previous slide, and one would expect it to be too light and generate non-universal couplings. However, overall, the situation in this anisotropic case seems to be a lot better than in type 2B string theory, where all the moduli seem to go to generate dangerous couplings. Here, by going to this kind of compactification with U1 factors, we were able to uplift, hopefully, all moduli but one. So this argument clearly is not a theorem, and it could have possible caveats. One is a case where there is a small number of moduli whose couplings are highly constrained by symmetry arguments. For example, it has been argued in the literature that the modulus which controls the distance between the length of the interval, like in the heterotic M-theory case, has couplings strongly constrained by the five-dimensional diffeomorphism invariance, which would relax the bounds on its mass. So this might be true for some other moduli. It would be interesting to find such examples. Another caveat is to consider anisotropic compactifications, as I have just discussed the case of heterotic M-theory. So this seems to be mainly relevant for anomaly mediation. And the last point, which should not be forgotten, is that this argument was based just on studying the scaling of the masses. We did not actually compute all the coefficients in front of the mass of the moduli, and it could be the case that in certain examples these coefficients or numerical factors are large enough to lift the mass of the moduli above the KK scale, even though the scaling is unfavorable with the size of the compactification manifold. So let me summarize. In 2 to 3 years, we should know whether this talk is relevant in any way, in particular whether there is a low energy supersymmetry in the nature, and we should also have hints about how the supersymmetry gets mediated. At the moment, the only hint we have is the absence of flavor-changing neutral currents, and which indicate that the mediation mechanism should be flavor-blind. This favors the models which I discuss in this talk, namely gauge-gauge general anomaly mediation. Those are the most popular flavor-blind mediation mechanisms. The gauge mediation mechanism, I have persuaded you, can be naturally embedded into string theory by taking visible and hidden sectors which live on two nearby stacks of D-brains. And I have described a semi-realistic example, and it would be exciting to build more realistic examples of gauge mediation. On the other hand, as far as anomaly and gauge general mediation goes, it seems that in most string compactifications, cavity and moduli mediation would dominate over them, because the bulk fields are too light, and their couplings between the hidden and visible sectors are not Yukawa suppressed. There might be exceptions to this no-go theorem that I have discussed, for example, anisotropic compactifications and so on. And as it usually is with no-go theorem, there is probably a counterexample to it, and I hope that maybe somebody out of the audience will find it. Yeah, okay, that's all. Well, the phenomenological reason why people like anomaly mediation is because it's flavor blind. What phenomenologists do, they just assume that all the dangerous scalars are heavy enough so that sequestering works. That's essentially all the thought that they have put into suppressing gravity mediation. Well, there is one thing that one has to keep in mind, is that anomaly mediation does not work. That's because it leads to tachyonic leptons. I I showed here that the mass, well, the thing with anomaly mediation is that it's too predictive. It predicts the mass of the quarks given by this formula. And when you evaluate this for the sleptons, you will find that this mass squared is negative, so the sleptons are tachyonic. And in the nature, we know that this is not the case. So any kind of model which is using anomaly mediation has to also supplement it with another mechanism of supersymmetry breaking mediation, which will uplift the sleptons and give them positive masses. So in particular, people discuss some models where you, for example, give an F term to the conformal compensator, and then there is another sector which gets F term from the conformal compensator, and then these two together couple to the standard model, and you get the successful model. But so one thing which people assume is that most of the moduli are heavy, so that they don't generate dangerous flavor changing neutral currents. But there are some which are light, which will cure the problems with tachyonic sleptons. And they do assume, well, they have to assume that these light moduli do not introduce the problems of the other heavy moduli. So, this is the situation with anomaly mediation.
So are there three models which really are anomaly dominated?
Well, nobody has ever constructed one. And in our work, we argue that unless people are really clever, they are not going to construct one.